This is Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, joined by Lansing Lugnuts team physician, Dr. Julie Dodds. Team physician ever since 1996. What was that first year like?
It was pretty interesting, Jesse. We were just trying to get our feet on the ground and get organized as far as what the teams needed from us and, you know, what we could offer the teams as far as physicians.
How were you contacted?
We were contacted actually by the Lugnuts organization. I and the group of physicians I was working with at the time called and asked if we were interested. At that time, we were team physicians for Michigan State, and they called and asked if we were also interested in helping out with coverage of the Lugnuts.
How many teams are you the team physician for?
Currently, probably about six.
And this spans all seasons, all year.
Yeah, it does. This is between my daughter's hockey teams and as unofficial team physicians and some contracted team physicians with area high schools, and then the Lugnuts gigs. There's quite a few teams that I'm running around covering games and taking care of athletes.
How often do you get free time?
What's free time?
All right, let me pose it this way then. What is your busiest season?
This fall is actually when there's still baseball going on and football going on, especially when the Lugnuts make the playoffs. I have a few weeks there of a lot of sports going on between soccer and baseball and football, and that tends to be my busiest time.
We're talking with Dr. Dodds, Lansing Lugnuts team physician. I saw in your undergrad work you actually studied zoology. Is that true?
That is true. I was thinking about being a veterinarian and ended up changing my tune. Got partway through my undergrad and decided that I might want to think about taking care of people. And so I ended up taking care of athletes, which sometimes the way they behave is not that far removed from taking care of the animals. But it's been a great career. And like I said, it was a great path that kind of led me up through this.
Now, you're from Iowa. You started off at Iowa State University, and then you went to the University of Iowa. Was there any rivalry in your family?
The family, no, but, you know, when you get to Iowa and they find out that you were previously a Cyclone, you were kind of shunned for a while. But then for those first few years, you tend to still cheer for your undergraduate school, the school you were at. But after you've been in at Iowa for a while, I kind of got turned over to be a little bit more of a Hawkeye fan than a Cyclone fan.
All right. And you keep on going through big schools. Then you went to Vanderbilt University. Now you're at Michigan State University. What are the differences?
Well, you got to throw my other alum in there, University of Wisconsin. I was there for a while, too. You can't forget the Badgers.
You're covering the Big Ten.
Oh, I am trying to. Yeah, there's quite a few differences just in philosophies of the schools within the athletic departments as far as, number one, budgets, and number two, just kind of the fan bases, the intrastate rivalries and things like that are very different at each school you go to. Like University of Wisconsin really doesn't have an intrastate rival. And so, you know, most of anybody that lives in Wisconsin, if they're going to cheer for a college team, is going to cheer for Wisconsin.
What brought you to East Lansing?
I came here to work with the teams at Michigan State. It was a great opportunity. I had worked at the University of Iowa with the Hawkeyes and wanted to continue that type of position where I would continue to work with the intercollegiate teams.
Now, did you work with more teams or less teams at Michigan State than you had with the Hawkeyes?
Probably about the same. You know, you kind of cover all the teams and kind of work where you were needed. And so I did experience covering most of the teams at both schools.
We've seen recently there's an increase in the education about concussions and football. What have you seen in working with athletics and in athletes over these years? What has changed? What have people learned?
There's been a tremendous change in concussions in the 20 years that I've, actually probably more like 25 years that I've been working with sports medicine. There's a lot more realization of concussions, and I think the big thing is the long-term consequences of concussions, and that if they aren't treated correctly early on, and athletes are just asked to go back and play with continued concussion symptoms, that this can lead to long-term problems, or even there's something called second impact syndrome where there can be a sudden death if an athlete returns with continued concussion symptoms. So I think it's a lot more attempt at getting public awareness too at the bad things that can happen if athletes are playing with concussions.
Have you had a moment recently or in the past couple of years that you said, oh, if I knew then what I know now?
And the problem is I don't know what happened to some of those athletes back 20 years ago that I treated by what were the guidelines at that time. I mean, we had standards amount of time that if you had what we thought was so severe of a concussion, an amount of concussion, that would just dictate being out for a certain period of time. Well, now we realize that every concussion is different. And back then, if somebody just had a mild concussion, we'd keep them out for a week and we'd just send them back. Now, if they have what we think is a mild concussion, we continue to monitor them. And until they return to their baseline status, we don't return them back. And I think I probably returned some kids back to activities back then. You know, fortunately, at that time, I didn't have any immediate consequences of returning them back. But long term, you just never know what type of consequences you had if those kids were really returned too soon back into competition.
I'm speaking with Dr. Julie Dodds, Lansing Lugnuts team physician ever since that inaugural year of 1996. Now to baseball. We know that 1996 all the way up to the early 2000s, there was huge PED use, all the performance-enhancing drugs. Was there anything that you might have noticed in the minor leagues?
As far as changes, I think there's a little, it seems to be a little more awareness on the coaches' parts and a little more emphasis on discouraging some of the performance-enhancing drugs. There have been, you know, some studies and things that have come out with some dangers. I think the thing we're seeing now, though, is the big surge of energy drinks as opposed to the things like Sudafed and things like that that they used in the past as far as stimulants, like with the pitchers and things like that. Now we're seeing a big boost in the energy drinks, which I'm not a whole, you know, totally thinking that they're completely safe because they really haven't been well studied.
The Red Bull, the 5-hour energy, drink a Monster, that sort of thing.
Yeah, those type of things. And I see them used just rampantly in the athletic population now. And they all vary with what the content is in them. And there's some of the ingredients in them like that are tagged as amino acids, but with some of those amino acids, when they're used in excess, can have bad consequences.
When was the advent of these energy drinks? When did that start being introduced?
You know, as far as from just my personal knowledge and what I've seen them around, you know, probably a big boom in them in the last 5 years. And there were a few of them around before that, but I would say the last 5 years is where we're really seeing them, you know, in the vending machines, in the hockey rinks, and in the locker rooms and things like that.
Have the types of injuries that you've seen over the years, has that changed at all? Has there been an increase in a certain type of injury or a decrease in a certain type?
Well, getting away from minor league and major league baseball and going down to the younger kids, there has been a huge increase in the injuries in the younger kids playing repetitive sports and repetitive activities within sports. I mean, there's a huge epidemic now of the adolescents, the 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids with elbow and shoulder injuries from pitching and throwing too much. And because these kids are now playing mostly year-round sports, they get facilities and the abilities and coaches to play, you know, the same sport year-round. We're seeing a lot of overuse injuries in the younger population now, and that's probably what's changed the most in the past 20 years that I've been working.
What ages is that?
Again, it's probably 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-olds, what we call adolescents, where kids are kind of doing their major growing, and they're putting these stresses on their bodies that are not usual just because of the repetitive nature of what they're doing.
Do you ever sit back and say to yourself, boy, sports, there's a lot to be entertained by it, but these are really dangerous. These are really terrible on our bodies.
Well, I think if they're used in, like anything, if it's done in moderation, it's great. And you know, that's what a lot of the research and things are for, to try to figure out what is a safe level for amount of activity that kids undergo, how many pitches that the little leaguers should be throwing, what types of pitches. There's ongoing research about things like that. Same thing with concussions and what are safe parameters for kids to play at. So I think as long as the research continues and as long as, you know, parents and coaches listen to what the research is showing us, then I think, you know, they can be safe.
To broaden things out just a little bit, what has the most current research been on? What are people learning about, or what's the most current knowledge that's being introduced that's got everyone enthused?
I think probably some of the things, again, some of the injuries we don't see in baseball quite as much, things like anterior cruciate ligament injuries. There are programs now that are to be preventative for, like, the basketball and soccer players, especially females. A lot of preventative programs to keep them from getting these injuries.
Damaging their ACL or tearing it. You've published a number of papers.
Correct. It is really... I said it's a great step in our knowledge to not only be able to treat these injuries once they occur, but the ability to prevent them in the first place.
Makes sense. Well, one more question about baseball, and that is simply, while you watch a game, do you ever watch a game on pins and needles just in case you might be needed, or do you get to relax a little bit?
On baseball, it's not as tough because we really don't see that many on-the-field injuries. We see more of the chronic overuse type of things with the pitchers with the sore elbows and the sore shoulders. So baseball, I can be fairly relaxed. I have, you know, great athletic trainers that are there watching the field and can be first responders if something major should happen. You know, it's a little more pins and needles type of thing, you know, in football where you have 300-pound people going at each other at high rates of speed. That's a little bit more pins and needles. And actually, the worst pins and needles of all is I was asked to cover rodeo, and I had to cover bull riding. And that's 8 seconds of total pins and needles.
Whiplash.
Well, whiplash, not somewhat, but when the guys get bucked off the bulls, you don't know how they're going to land. You don't know if they're going to get stepped on by the bulls. So that is the greatest 8 seconds of pins and needles that I have ever watched.
Is that right?
That's true.
Was there anything that you watched on the Olympics that made you cringe a little bit?
The Olympics this year were pretty safe. I didn't see a whole lot that, you know, looked fairly unsafe. I always cringe when I watch gymnastics. I mean, just looking at the potential for injury with a lot of that, I mean, it's amazing that there aren't more catastrophic things that happen. You know, just this past year at Michigan State, there was a major neck injury on one of the Michigan State gymnasts. Fortunately, you know, I wasn't covering them, and but they said, and you know, there's that potential every time they do a release move or do a flip on the beam. There's always that potential of not landing correctly and landing on their head or neck.
And finally, what's something simple that anyone listening in involved in sports, what's something simple they can do to avoid an injury that you think should be avoided more often than it is?
Well, I think the main thing is just to use your head. I mean, I see a fair amount of stress fractures in kind of weekend warrior athletes that decide all of a sudden they're going to significantly increase their mileage or increase their activity and do it very quickly. I think anytime you're going to get into either a new sport or a new activity or try to reach a higher level, you have to do it gradually. So again, everything in moderation, and listen to your body. I mean, it will usually tell you if you're doing bad things, and you know, if you have a question as to whether or not this pain is abnormal or normal, I mean, see a physician and get it checked out and get some advice as far as whether or not what you're doing is actually harming you.
The great Dr. Julie Dodds, Lansing Lugnuts team physician. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Jesse.
I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. This is Lugnuts Baseball on Big Country 92.1.